Mahlathi.
We received letters from the Minister of Transport, the DG of Transport, Mr. A. Moyemi, Ms. Thandiwe Mpondo. She's going to leave early. She's attending Select Committee on Transport. That's all, Chair.
Okay. Otherwise, everybody's in the house. Let me take then this opportunity to welcome all the members in the house and our guests. I'm told we have about 35 guests today. Is that correct, Mahlathi?
Yes, Chair.
Let me greet all the guests, the departmental officials, our own officials, honorable members. You are welcome to this second meeting of this week, where we are going to have two, a submission and presentation. And because the presentation has to start now, the submission has to start now, we do recognize and accept the apologies from the Minister and the DG and Ms. Thandiwe Mpondo, whom I guess is still with us, will leave a bit earlier. With those words, I think let's get going. You are welcomed. Let's allow a submission by Mr. Herman Veldenboer. Are you here, sir?
Thank you, sir. I'm here. Thank you.
Thank you very much. You can go ahead.
Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity of addressing honorable members. I'll start. I'll try to be as thorough as possible. In regard to my first issue, regards definitions contained in Section 1 of the Act. Now, the first four issues I've raised all relate to the fact that the word airport is being replaced by the word aerodrome in the Act. That is the first important change. So in my first slide, the expression airport manager has to be deleted. The correct expression is aerodrome manager as contained in the draft bill. So aerodrome manager should remain. Second one is same designated airport. In the draft bill, the expression designated aerodrome is being used. So the expression designated airport has to be deleted. Thirdly, same issue, the word airport appears in the Act. And that word is having, as I stated, been replaced by the word aerodrome. For this reason, the word airport has to be changed to aerodrome. One important that I picked up here is that in section 139 of the Principal Act, so the words airport and heliport have not yet been replaced by the word aerodromes. Next issue, definition of heliport. As the word heliport is the included definition of aerodrome in the draft bill, the word heliport can be deleted in the Act. Just one caution, the word heliport is used in one part 139 of the Civil Aviation Regulations. Therefore, the definition of heliport has to remain in part one of the above mentioned regulations. Secondly, the next one is I want to refer to is definition of the expression executive responsible for the aircraft accident and incident investigation. In this regard, the problem is that in the definition, it's not clear what exactly the functions, powers, and duties of the of the said executive is, was he's basically, in civil aviation authority terms, he's basically a general manager. In part 12 of the regulations that deals with aircraft and incident investigations, his functions are set out in various parts of part 12. And to make it easy, I think that everyone knows what exactly his functions is. I think that definition should be changed to include the words that his functions is as prescribed by regulation. That'd be easy to solve this issue. In this regard, as I mentioned, there a problem is that in the clause 28 and 29 of the draft bill, ASIP also has some powers and functions that is in conflict, that duplicates the functions of the executive in part 12 of regulations. So there is an overlap that will have to be cleared up. But the definition of the executive's functions have to be as prescribed by regulation, that has to be added to in the definition as such. The problem is that the functions of the executive cannot be limited to the fact that he can appoint investigators. I think that would be the function of the HR division, but his functions must be clearly established in the definition of the term executive. Next issue I want to raise is the fact that it's basically at clause 8, amendment of section 18(1)(g) of the Principal Act. There's a reference to the 1993 Constitution, which is wrong. It should be changed to the current Constitution, the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa, Act number 96, number 108 of 1996. Then next issue is clause number 10. 13, amendment of section 74 of the Act. This is an important issue. This relates to the notice period of increase in fees and charges and levies as proposed. The problem with this four months period is that it puts the CARCOM, it puts a lot of strain on the CARCOM process as such. The CARCOM process is, as you all know, is a really complicated and time-consuming process. Documents have to be drafted, and proposed amendments have to be published, the Government Gazette for comment. Comments have to be received, have to be evaluated before being sent to the CARCOM meeting. CARCOM may decide to refer it to the subcommittees, to one of the six subcommittees established by the Act. The subcommittee has got to report back to the CARCOM. If CARCOM recommends the amendment or amendments, the amendments are to be drafted by the legal section of the CAA and is submitted to the minister for his approval and signature. And as I say, that also has to go through the DOT's legal section for the approval. So it's quite a lengthy procedure, which takes time. And if this, and it must be borne in mind that a CARCOM only takes place only every 2 months. The problem is this, that the industry personnel who attends this meetings do it freely out of their own will without any compensation as such. And a CARCOM meeting is basically a whole day. That's the same with the subcommittee. So I don't think it is a solution to have more CARCOM meetings as such. At this stage, if I've worked out in my worked out from start to finish, when the idea starts to increase a fee or a charge, you'll have to start at least 10 months before the proposed amendment can come into effect. I think that's a very long time. So I think that makes it very difficult to comply with. So that's what I then therefore suggest, that the 4 months period should be should be reduced. I just have to mention also in this regard, there is a proposal in section 155 in the act, in the draft bill, for the establishment of a fees committee. Now, a fees committee will also, in fact, also take time and to get all the people together. And the important point in this regard is that at this point in time, a CARPM subcommittee meeting relating to fees are an existence. So if in fact a fees committee is established as envisaged, it's going to have a duplication of functions. The establishment of the fees committee as in Clause 60 will not shorten the proceedings as such. The next one is one issue in regard to levies. Levies do not form part of CARPM procedure as set out here. A proposal is made by the Minister of Transport, the Minister of Finance, and he has to respond within a certain period of time whether he's satisfied with the increase in the fuel levy or not. That has to be dealt with separately because that does not fall within the CARPM process as such. Next is what I suggest is the fact that the period for the noticing of increasing fees should be reduced from 4 months as such. And last, I think I finished with clause 13 as such. Then I move to clause 13, amendment of section 74. Clause 13, amendment of section 76 of the Principal Act. This relates to the functions of the CAA board. Now, in the light of recent developments, I think it would be prudent to add to the words attempting to influence a commissioner as part to prevent the CAA board from attempting to influence the commissioner. It should be added to the words that the board should be prevented from compromising or obstructing the commissioner's execution of his or her duties as such. That is my point. That's my submission on clause 14. Next one I deal with is clause 48, amendment of section 150 of the Act. This deals with the granting of exemptions. Now, in terms of the proposed amendment, the exemption should be granted by the Minister of Transport. The problem with this issue is that the amendment will only cause unnecessary administrative holdups and delays to the detriment of the client. The administrative process currently in place pertaining to exemptions involves input of the technical divisions and the legal division of the CAA, which have to consult on a regular basis as such. Any recommendation by the technical or legal divisions has to follow the administrative chain of command, which takes time. Just to give an example, if it's a technical division of say safety security, official is assigned to deal with the with the proposed proposed exemption. Then finished, it goes to his manager, it then goes to the senior manager, and then goes to the general manager of the division. Then it goes to the legal section, legal division of the CAA. Then it's been assigned to a legal advisor who, when doing his part, it's been submitted to the senior manager of the legal division, and then to the general manager of the legal division, and then it goes to the director of subrogation for the necessary approval. And then it may happen that the director may have some issues, then it can be referred to either the legal or the technical divisions for necessary assistance. What I'm trying to point out, that this takes time. And the problem is, if one person, for example, is one of the persons in this chain of command is ill on that day, was not from work or not at work, it repeatedly upsets the time schedule. Present, it's for the technical and legal divisions of the CAA, it's very easy to communicate. They're located on the same premises. It's easy for director to have meetings to clarify issues that have arisen before decision is taken, before making decision as such. I move on to the next point. A number of problems have arisen in respect of exemptions that have to be finalized within a period of 3 days due to the process being laid down for handling those exemptions. As I say, it has to go through a number of stages, and if there's a hold up in one of the stages, it completely throws out the time limits. Should the Minister of Transport or the DOT require information from the CAA technical division after have exemptions gone through the CAA procedure, it can result in further delays. In this regard, it's submitted that the director commissioner as to retain the power to grant or refuse applications for the granting of alternative means of compliance as contained in subpart 4 of part 11. This is basically an exemption that is for an indefinite period of time. However, it is submitted that in the case of an application for the granting of an exemption from provision of the Act, that's to say Subrogation Act, the minister must have authority to decide the application. But in regard to exemptions, application from the regulations, submitted that the director should retain the powers for the reasons set out above in this document. I think I finished with this clause. Next one is, importantly, a clause, this is a reference to clauses 52 and 56 to 59, amendment of sections 140 and 145 to 148 of the Act. The powers, functions, and duties granted to authorized persons, which are security related, specifically referenced activities pertaining to aircraft and aerodromes, have been extended to authorized officers in the employ of the CAA appointed by the Director Commissioner. This issue, to remember that the inspectors and authorized officers in the service of the CAA, their powers are limited to safety-related issues. Now, in relating to powers, functions, and duties of authorized persons, that relate to issues such as siege, seizure, and arrest. In this regard, members of the SAPS and SNADF have the necessary powers of search, seizure, and arrest if they, in fact, are deployed on an aerodrome. In fact, that's the same position with security of, officers appointed by the airport aerodrome manager as such. They've got the powers as such that's related to security issues. As I said, powers of search, seizure, and arrest, which are included in the said clauses, are part of statutory powers conferred on members of the ASAPS and SADF. Powers, functions, and duties of authorized officers, inspectors of terms in terms of the Act, are all safety related and do not include drastic powers like seizure and arrest. For this reason, it is submitted that the blurring of the distinction between the powers, functions, and duties of security of authorized officers and authorized persons are not justified. Authorized persons' duties are limited to activities regarding the aerodromes and aircraft at aerodromes. But the other powers, authorized officers' powers should remain as such, only related to safety issues as contained in the regulations as such. That is my point on this issue. The next one is next point is relates to at clause 53, amendment of section 142 sub 3 of the Act. The words of the convention relating to offences and other acts committed on board aircraft under Tokyo are unnecessary and confusing. The reference to marshalling signals, interception maneuvers, and orders relate to annex to the convention. It doesn't have a bearing on the Tokyo Convention 1963, which relates to offences and other acts committed on board an aircraft. So the words of the convention relating to offences and other acts committed on board an aircraft signed 1963, signed in Tokyo, should be deleted as it has no bearing on annex to the convention. The deletion of the mentioned words will not affect the content and meaning of the provision as such. Thank you. That's my input on those on this clause. The next clause, add clause 60, section 155 sub 1 of the Act. A fees committee as envisaged in the said clause already has existence as a subcommittee of PARCOM as per section 159 of the Act and subpart 2 of part 11 of the regulations. It consists of members of the industry. This inclusion of this provision will only lead to duplication of an already existing function as exercised by one of the subcommittees of PARCOM. Then our next issue, I think it's last one, is at clause 61, deletion of section 163.3 of the Act. Deletion not justified for the following reasons. The introduction of an international aviation standard does not require a physical insertion of the said standard. It is incorporated by reference by the director. And it's incorporated by reference to the proposed standards title, name, title and year of issue. And it doesn't form physically part of the CATS document, of the written CATS document as such. A copy of the said document is available in the office of the director at present for necessary information. But it does not form part of the text of the said CATS document. Therefore, in this reason, the existing subsection 2 has to remain as it indicates a process for the issuing of an international aviation standard. The proposed subsection 2 that's included does not cover this issue, does not make provision for the introduction of international aviation standard by view of reference. So a physical insertion cannot take place in regard to clause 60 in this issue, in this regard. Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity of making a presentation to the committee.
Are you done, sir? Hello?
Hello, I'm unmuted.
Yes, are you done?
I'm done. Thank you, sir, I'm done.
Thank you very much for your presentation, Mr. Herman Veldenboer, for the presentation. It is a norm in this department that after each and every presentation, honorable members of this portfolio committee will ask some pertinent questions. And I wish to allow hands in this meeting. Any hand for clarity seeking questions, comments, any hands? Baba Ketamaba. Yes, honorable member.
Chairperson, thank you very much for the presentation for this amendment. But I'm trying to check, Chairperson, on clause 13. Amendment of section 74 of the act, bullet number 2 and bullet number 14, if they can classify that one, because I'm trying to understand it, because when we check it, it says in this presentation, note is taken of the fact that it is proposed in the draft bill, the concept of the Minister of Finance and would not longer be required. But when you check another clause, as to levies, the Minister of Finance is still required to indicate to the Minister of Transport within the specific period of time that the proposed increase in levies of acceptable. If that one can be, those two can be clarified. And the other one, Chairperson, is the clause 14. Clause 14 says amendments of section 76 of the Act provisions has to be made in addition to preventing the CAA board from compromising or obstructing the director or commissioner to prevent any attempt to unduly influencing the director. I'm trying to check that one. If I don't know, I'm trying to understand it, because you see, English is not our language. If they can clarify it, Chairperson, thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mondisa. As you lower your hand, I can see Honorable Chabango will be followed by Honorable Chris Hunsinger. Asiengwan. Honorable Chabangu, unmute yourself, and this is your opportunity. Okay.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you now.
Thank you very much. Let me also say thank you for the presentation that has been given to us by Mr. Herman. My first question would be, why aerodrome is used instead of airport? Can he elaborate a little bit with regard to that? Two, why is the Minister of Finance always having the final weight compared to the Minister of Transport? Thank you.
I hear you. Thank you, Honorable Shabangu. Baba Unzinger, ixesha ngelakho.
Inkosi kakhulu, Chairperson. Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you also, Mr. Herman Wildenboer, for your presentation and submission. Thank you for going into great detail, reflecting on the effort that you submitted and suggested around change of definitions, words, and alignment to other bills and this one as well. I would also like you for the record to just state your credentials and authority like everybody did yesterday, and your role in aviation, just for the record. And if you could also please just give me your opinion around the idea in this legislation to discontinue the involvement of the Civil Aviation Regulation Committee, what your perspectives are on the intention then not to extend the involvement. I also know that in 2006 you wrote a substantial input and valuable article perspective on aviation crashes with certain suggestions. To what extent is this design a alignment to what you proposed then, and what could further be considered around your suggestions and ideas of that perspective that you said in 2006 already? Thank you very much, Mr. Wildenboer. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. Enkosi kakhulu, Baba U Honsinger. Let's then go back to Mr. Herman Wildenboer. Are you still with us, sir?
I'm with you. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you, but I can't see your face, but yeah.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, sir. To start with my CV, I've got a BALLB from University of Pretoria many moons ago. I was employed by the Department of Transport as legal advisor for a period of 12 years, and I've been a principal legal advisor in the CAA for the period of 17 years. I hope this this answers your question as to my credentials. As I say, I'm still involved in the, and I still sometimes do some work for the Civil Aviation Authority on a consultancy basis. I hope that is enough for your information. Thank you. And then can I come then to the questions as such? Is that correct?
Yes, yes.
Okay. I'll just clarify one issue was, I hope I've written it down correctly, the use of the expression aerodrome instead of the word airport. That's basically the wording that the ICAO uses in its documentation as such. And it's accepted a word, aerodrome, and it's basically contained in most of the legislation administered under the auspices of ICAO. So it's basically a suggestion by ICAO to rather use the word aerodrome instead of aerodrome. Aerodrome has got a more extended meaning. It also includes the buildings and other fixtures around the actual airport as such. I hope that clarifies the first question. Then there was an issue about the Minister of Finance. As understood, it's in terms of principle amendments to financial documents proposals have to go to the Minister of Finance. And that has been taken up since the start of Superannuation Authority. And I don't think it's easy to get away from that proposal. You'll have to have the necessary input from the Minister of Finance. What is interesting to see with this amendment that has been proposed, it says the Minister of Finance's powers is now being restricted in regard to fees. In regard to fees, it's not necessary to approach the Minister of Finance anymore, but in regard to charges, in other words, the civil aviation safety charge will still have to go to the Minister of Finance. The ratio for the difference between the two, between fees and charges, I can't understand, but it's a basic principle that in the case of financial issues, it has to go to the Minister of Finance. As I say, unfortunately, it's got a delaying effect, but as I say, that's the way I think we have to approach it, that it has to go, at least charges would have to go to the Minister of Finance for the necessary approval. In regard to levies too, in terms of the Civil Aviation Authority Levies Act, levies also has to be approved by has to be a levy. In other words, increase in the fuel levy has to be approved by the Minister of Finance. I hope that answers your question. And then what else? There was one also on. Let me just pick it up on the CAA board, am I correct? On the CAA board, it's just to prevent, as I say, there's a provision now that the CAA board must not compromise or obstruct the commissioner in execution of his or her duties. Now, on the same principle, a lot of things that we see seen here in the Zondo Commission. It's proposed that the words also that the provision that the CAA boards also be prevented to attempt to influence or unduly influence the commissioner. That's my motivation for adding this provision to the said clause. David, Mr. Hunziker, two issues. As to CARCOM, in my view, is a necessary institution. It gives the chance for the simulation authority to meet with the industry to discuss proposed amendments, etc. And it also gives opportunity to giving the industry as such to provide input, even writing, to issues. But the attendance is important. As I say, it's basically a labor of love. As I stated before, the members do it out of their free and voluntary and without any financial inducement. And I think it's the only way to make certain that provisions are recommended for implementation that complies with ICAO provisions and standards. These members know the ICAO provisions in regard to the issues on their particular field of interest, and I think it's of crucial importance that CARCOM in fact remains as a institution to deal with any proposed amendments or deletions. I think that they fill an important role, and even the subcommittees, if CARCOM is not happy on an issue or not certain what to do, it goes to the subcommittee. So I think in all due respect, I think it's CARCOM is the place where amendments are basically fine-tuned and corrected when necessary to be in line with any with ICAO with ICAO recommendations. As far as my memory goes, remember I'm not a youngster anymore. In, I don't know of any one case in which the Minister of Transport came back to the CIA and said, listen, this proposed amendment is not up to scratch, is not in line with ICAO standards. So I think Carcom's record speaks for itself. I hope this, but I must, it is definitely an institution must remain. Just for the record, in part 11, it's Carcom is also made provided for its basic duplication of provisions. In part 11 of the regulations, the whole Carcom procedure is set out, as in the existing part, sections 155 to 159 of the Act. But as I say, I think it's a decision that should remain due to its results that it has achieved over all the years. One last thing I must just check up, yes, is regard to my view on accident investigations. As I say, there should be the investigation, aircraft investigation should be, in my view, a separate unit. It should be separate from the CIA. Now, to various reasons, it cannot be the case. So this proposal in the draft bill, I think, covers the issue in that the officials may be seconded of the CIA investigation unit may be seconded to the Department of Transport and to do the necessary investigations, and they then report to this as a board. So that in that regard, I think that the independence of the CIA investigation unit from the CIA is in fact being addressed. The only issue, as I say, it might be necessary in effect to completely transfer all the members or officials of the CIA investigation unit to the DOT, to be employees of the DOT. That's also a possibility. But I think the idea is correct that a distinction between the CIA and the investigation unit has been made, and that the commissioner will be entitled to provide a objective meeting on any result of an aircraft investigation or an incident investigation as such. Mr. Hunziker, I don't know if that answers your question as such. Thank you, sir. I think I've answered all the questions posed to me.
Yes, I also think so, sir. If there's any question that has not been answered, members are free to raise their hand now or keep quiet forever. I see Honorable Stole's hand is up. Mondiz.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I'm not saying I've not been answered, but I'm worried about this thing of deleting the airport, because airport is just common now. Everybody knows that when I'm talking about airport, what I'm talking about. But if you are saying you are talking about aerodrome, sometimes it is not possible. I'm trying to check from the presenter. Is it possible if we can delete the aerodrome and leave the airport?
No, the presenter presents their view. And as we sit, we will then take into consideration also our views as a committee. Mr. Herman.
Thank you, sir.
I think we are done. I want to take this opportunity to thank you for having taken time to come and speak to us on issues that you think needs to be considered before this bill can be finalized. As we see it, as a portfolio committee, we'll take into consideration also your inputs as we go through this bill. We want to thank you really for making time to come and speak with us. Otherwise, if you don't have anything from your side, you are liberated, sir.
Thank you, sir. Just apologize for a couple of typos. I was in the pressure to do it. I really apologize, but I think I hope I presented I presented what I think you needed to know, and I hope it's clear to you what my reason for the various comments were.
It's very clear, crystal clear, sir. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Much appreciated. Thank you for the.
You enjoy your day further.
Make a presentation.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. I'm excused.
Yes, you are excused, sir. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye.
Goodbye. Thank you.
We are now ready for the responses by the Department of Transport on the written submissions on the bill we are talking about. Honorable Stolle, I see your name here. Are you responsible for presenting? Baba Mazombo.
Thanks, Chairperson. Yes, I'm here, Chairperson.
And I guess that it is you who's in the forefront of responding. Am I correct?
Chairperson, you're correct. I've got also my delegation here. The apologies for the ministers, for the minister and the DG is already given to the committee, and the DG has delegated that I must lead the delegation. I've got Ms. Paziri, who's also in the department. We have also requested Saka to join us to come and give us their clarification to assist in clarifying the practicalities of the bill. Mr. Livas Mavaso, I'm not sure whether it's connected because it's abroad in Canada, but he promised to connect. He's also an employee of the Department of Transport. They will also be assisting in responding to the questions. And we are ready to proceed with the responses.
Wow. My learned friend, you can go ahead.
Thanks, Chairperson, and thanks for the opportunity, and good morning to honorable members.
A very good morning to you.
Thanks, Chairperson. I think the presentation has been circulated and is depicted on the screen. And I will continue as follows. There was a question from the LLN Association of South Africa, which was asking why SACA should be considered a preferential creditor by relying on amendments to legislation to assure this, as opposed to other creditors who also believe that they have the same right to claim amounts due to them for commercial arrangement or having performed a specific service for that organization. Our response to this is that the situation with SACA is different in the sense that they are made preferential creditors for monies collected on their behalf. Chairperson, the key word is money collected on their behalf. In essence, this money does not belong to the collector. It is prescribed that money is collected on behalf of SACA. So automatically, naturally, that money must be kept separate from the business account of the collector. So that in the event there is a mishap of insolvency for that particular collector, the money that has been specifically collected on behalf of SACA is safe. That is the essence of this particular amendment. And like I want to emphasize the words, money collected on behalf of SACA. In essence, the collector knows very well that this is not my money. I can't use it as a business money. I can't defray my expenses. This money is specifically strictly collected on behalf of SACA, and it must be transmitted to SACA come month end. That is the emphasis, Chairperson. This money is not related to commercial arrangement between SACA and that particular entity, but is collected on behalf of SACA in terms of legislation. SACA is not being made a preferential creditor for any debt arising from a commercial arrangement or for services rendered. This is purely the money held in trust for SACA. The money is not part of the revenue earned by the particular entity for all commercial debts. SACA has not been afforded any preferential treatment to any other entity. This does not in any way compromise the provisions of the Companies Act or the Insolvency Act or any other legislation. For instance, the fuel levy, Chairperson, is collected by the fuel suppliers on behalf of SACA and therefore should also be protected. Passenger safety charge is also one charge that is collected from passengers by airlines on behalf of SACA. The financial model is meant to ensure that SACA is able to perform its functions, mandate, and fulfills its international obligations of ensuring civil aviation safety, security, and environment. Failure to pay over the monies collected on behalf of SACA will prejudice the aviation safety, and those that are mandated to collect these monies on behalf of SACA will be unjustifiably enriched. That is the first input and the response of the department. Then the next comment was that there is no requirement for the inclusion of paragraph WW in section 1551. This refers to the creation of a trust for the collection of money, fees, charges, or levies on behalf of SACA. The passenger safety charge is the only charge collected on behalf of SACA. All other monies, fees, levies are not collected on behalf of SACA and will not be applicable to the trust. Our response to this particular input from members of the public or from the CASA is that it is not correct that the passenger safety charge is the only charge collected on behalf of SACA. The fuel levy is also collected on behalf of SACA. It cannot be ruled out that in future, there can be other charges that are collected by any other entity on behalf of SACA. Paragraph WW is not mandating entities collecting money on behalf of SACA to open a trust account. The paragraph is an empowering provision giving the minister the power to make regulations that will mandate the creation of such accounts. This will be done when an assessment has been done and it is prevalent that it needs to be done. There is no burden associated with opening a trust account. This is a normal practice in regard to entities holding monies in trust on behalf of others. An example in this regard, Chairperson, is when you run a law firm, the money that you are holding on behalf of clients is not your business money. You cannot utilize that money. It must be deposited into a trust account. And once we have rendered the service, you must charge against that particular trust account of the client. And that money you cannot take it directly into your pocket. It must reflect into your business account for audit trail purposes. Then once it is in your business account, it is business money whereby you can defray expenses of the business. And the balance in the trust account is the balance of the person that you are holding that money in trust. So it is a normal practice, Chairperson, that any money that is not yours, or that you have collected, or that is paid on, that is held on behalf of someone else, you must separate it from your personal account or from your business account, so that when there is insolvency, an administration of estate, the monies that are held in trust are not automatically part of the insolvent estate because they are specifically held in trust for someone else. So that is, in short, in a layman's sense, the explanation. The next comment is that there is lack of clarity of the role of the executive responsible for accident and incident investigation appointed by SACA, who must report directly to the ASIP through an executive, it is not known. The response to that is that it is not necessary to outline the responsibilities of executive as the bill is not conferring any specific responsibility to the executive. The responsibilities of investigating aircraft accident and incident is given to ASIP, that is the Aviation Safety Investigation Board. This executive will be appointed by the SACA and will be responsible for managing the branch, that is the branch responsible for accident and incident investigations. This includes the personnel that will be designated by the ASIP as investigators for the investigation of specific accident. This particular response has been recently supported by the explanation or the input by Mr. Veldenboer that this person is just a general manager who will be managing the affairs of the investigation. There is a mandatory provision that the ASIP should conclude an MOU with the Commissioner for Civil Aviation regarding the reporting lines of the executive. This addresses the potential dual reporting regarding the management of the unit and the discharge of accident and incident investigation responsibilities designated by ASIP. There is therefore no need to make any special provision regarding the responsibilities of the executive. The accident investigators designated to investigate particular accidents will report directly to the ASIP through the executive designated for that purpose or for that purpose. This is to cater for a situation where the department might require that they report through an executive at the department. The key point is the designation of the executive for the purpose. The executive responsible for accident and incident investigation may also be one designated for that purpose. The next comment was the removal of section or repeal of section 157, 158, 159, 160, and 161 and 162. This particular provision deals with the establishment of CARCOM, Civil Aviation Regulating Committee, and also the procedures and the subcommittees of that particular committee, the administration, the remuneration and emergency of those regulations. All of those particular sections 157 to 161 and 162 are dealing specifically to establishment of CARCOM as they are reflecting in the Principal Act currently. This issue of relocating the function of CARCOM and establishment of CARCOM to the regulations has been thoroughly discussed with CARCOM, and CARCOM unanimously agreed with the explanation given why the sections are to be removed from the Act and to be incorporated almost verbatim in the regulations. So in essence, CARCOM's establishment is not necessarily totally repealed. It's a relocation of its establishment and all of its procedures into the regulations, verbatim as they are in the Principal Act. CASA is an active member of CARCOM chairperson. It is not ideal to make such detailed procedure in the primary legislation. They are better provided for in the regulations. The responsibility to make the regulation has been entrusted or vested in the minister. CARCOM is an advisory body. It is not clear how the independence of CARCOM will be dealt a blow by removing the provisions from the Act to the regulations. CASA also says the formulation of CARCOM is noted in this document. However, it states will operate as prescribed. Yes, Chairperson, it will operate as prescribed if it is repealed in the Principal Act and its provisions are prescribed, its establishment and procedures are prescribed by means of regulations. This is caused by misinterpretation of the provisions, Chairperson. Section 1551 is amended to include paragraph SS, which will give the minister the power to make regulations establishing CARCOM as a consultative structure as prescribed. And as prescribed means prescribed by regulations. That is in reference to the actions by SACA and the commissioner and not CARCOM. All aspects of CARCOM, including the current members and its operations, will not be affected by this particular change of relocating the provisions from the Act to the regulations. There is also this suggestion that the deletion of the word civil aviation in section 73 and also question section 72 in terms of the addition of paragraph G, which provide for the exercise any power or perform any duty conferred or imposed on it under any law. It appears as if the problem of the commentator is imposed on it under any law. The reason for that, it is envisaged that other legislation will give responsibilities to SACA. Such responsibilities will normally be accompanied by user charges or any form of compensation. This is not only limited to civil aviation legislation. The government can decide through legislation to give responsibilities to SACA. For instance, The Environmental Management Act may impose responsibilities on SACA on regulation of environmental aspects of civil aviation. Number of labor legislation imposed duty on SACA to perform certain functions. So that is why now we are saying, or under any other law. So we are open so that in future, should there be any other legislation that imposes duty on SACA, the Civil Aviation Act must be found to be welcoming that particular introduction. It is not unconstitutional. Okay, the other one was section 99, limitation of liability. It is not unconstitutional to limit personal liability for administrative decisions made in good faith. The state or law advisor has vetted this particular bill and they didn't found it to be unconstitutional. We therefore believe that section 99 is appropriate as proposed. Suggest the addition of paragraph ZZ in section 1551 to provide for the establishment of structures for the regulation and control of recreational aviation disciplines. Sorry for the typo, that should be disciplines not contemplated by ICAO. The response, Chairperson, is that recreational aviation falls under civil aviation. The responsibility to regulate civil aviation lies with SACA. South Africa has not made a policy decision to create other structures for regulation of certain aspects of civil aviation. The proposal, therefore, is not acceptable, and we don't believe in it, and we request that it be rejected. Clause 13.5, preferential creditor, to recover any such money, fee, charges, levies, so collected by such a person. SACA is a preferential creditor for monies collected on their behalf. Chairperson, I would like to emphasize the key words there, which distinguishes monies. Here we are saying money collected on their behalf, on behalf of SACA. Therefore, it means from even before collection, the collector knows that a portion of the money that is collecting belongs to SACA and it must be transmitted to SACA as such. He must not mix it with his business, and he must not put it in his business account, but he must put it in a trust account because it's a distinguished money for a specific purpose, for a specific person, which is SACA. And not for money owed by SACA due to commercial, we are not referring to money owed to SACA due to commercial or contractual arrangements. CASA family believes that ASIP should be a standalone entity independent of SACA in complying with ICAO Annex 13. Chairperson, this particular point has been hammered almost by every commentator. And to a particular extent, that is an ideal situation. That is why our chapter 4 that establishes this, the intention was really to make the body to be independent. The most ideal position would have been complete agency as provided in the current act. However, as explained, the current chapter 4 could not be proclaimed as it could not be operationalized due to financial situation of the country. The situation proposed in the bill is the most ideal position considering our circumstances as the country. This position has been discussed with ICAO and to a certain extent they were satisfied with the arrangements. With ASIP in place, they will easily deal with the situation similar to the calibration aircraft owned by SACA. The executive responsible for aircraft accident and incident investigation is responsible for managing the accident investigators, who will be designated by ASIP to investigate specific accidents. It is therefore critical that a framework be set in advance so as not to hamper the work of the ASIP. The executive will not be responsible for designation of investigators, but the management of the investigators. That is meant to enhance independence. The executive will only serve as an investigator in charge for a particular accident if the ASIP designate him or her as such. There's also a commentator from Mr. Van Zyl. The change of the name from, or the change of the title of director to that of commissioner, according to him, is an ego-boosting issue. Chairperson, our response to that, it is just the name that is being changed from director to director of civil aviation to commissioner for civil aviation. This is meant to address the confusion created by the title director, which is normally used in the public service and referring to senior management in the government departments. There is no need for any transitional arrangement in that regard. The mere changing of the name does not have any effect on the decision, on any decision made or about to be made by the director. The powers, the functions and responsibilities remain unchanged, that of director. This will also not affect the incumbent. There are no extra additional benefits that are going to arise out of this particular name change. There is no need for any change of documentations which were issued or signed under the title director. A pretty example, Chairperson, would be your marriage certificate that was signed long time ago by an officer at the time was called marriage commissioner. And if today the marriage officer is called marriage commissioner, it does not invalidate the certificate that you got sometimes in the 1950s. The certificate is equally valid as the certificate issued by another person with a different title from the one who issued it before. The validity of the two certificates will be the same. So that's how we are explaining this particular title change. The definition of airport manager, which expression is not used in the draft bill, be deleted, and the definition of the expression aerodrome manager be inserted. This particular input is welcomed, Chairperson, we agree with it. The provision in the Act relates to aerodrome manager. This was due to the fact that the provisions were only relating to designated airport. The bill imposes responsibilities on aerodrome managers, which includes airport managers. The definition of airport manager should therefore be replaced by the following definitions. And this is the suggested definition of an aerodrome manager. Means any person appointed in writing by the owner or management of an aerodrome to act in such capacity, or any person in control of an aerodrome, and includes any person appointed in writing by an owner or aerodrome management to discharge any function imposed or to exercise any power conferred upon an aerodrome manager by this act. The next issue was the expression designated airport appears in section 1 of the principal act. However, in clause 28, section 110 and 145, the expression designated aerodrome is used. In section 155(1)(EE), the expression designated airport still appears. The definition of designated airport has therefore to be deleted. Chairperson, also this input by the commentator, we really agree with it. To address the situation, the following amendments are proposed. One, the definition of designated airport should be replaced by the following definition. Designated aerodrome means any company airport as defined in section 1 of the Airport Company Act 1993, Act 44 of 1993, and includes any airport, helistop or heliport designated by the minister in terms of section 4, subsection 5. Subsection 5 of section 4 of the Act should be amended as follows. The minister may, in addition to the company airport defined in section 1 of the Airport Company Act 44 of 1993, by notice in the Gazette, designate any other aerodrome. There we are deleting the word airport and substitute it with the word aerodrome for the purposes of this act. Paragraph EE of section 155(1) should be amended as follows. The administrative steps which must precede the designation by the minister in accordance with definition of designated aerodrome of any airport or heliport as designated. These are just consequential amendments, Chairperson, by virtue of agreeing that these definitions and this expression should change. Therefore, there will always be some consequential amendment. For instance, where the word airport stands, then you substitute it with the word aerodrome. So it's a normal automatic thing that needs to be done. The definition should be, the commentator says the definition of airport appears in the Principal Act. From a perusal of the draft bill, it is apparent that the word aerodrome is being used and replaced the word airport. On this basis, the definition of airport needs to be deleted. Our response is that the definition should be maintained not to lose the difference between an aerodrome and an airport. The definition of aerodrome, airport, and heliport are used in ICAO differently. And in giving effective to the technical standards, there are provisions that only apply to airport and those that apply to heliport or aerodrome. If we limit it that way, we will be found wanting in the implementation of ICAO standards. The next comment is section 1J, new definition of executive responsible for aircraft accident and incident investigation. If appointed by SACA, a conflict of interest exists. This type of conflict clearly came to the fore with the fatal accident involving the flight inspection aircraft of the SACA in January 2020. Chairperson, if you have remembered the presentation by the last presenter, Mr. Veldenboer, he has also came up with a proviso that needs to be added to this particular definition if we don't define the functions of this particular person, executive responsible for aircraft accident, and say as prescribed by regulations. So he, in essence, he says we don't have to define or give the functions of the executive in the legislations, but we can say as prescribed in the regulations. That sounds mild and it can be looked into, but the most ideal position would have been a complete agency as provided in the current act. However, as explained, the current chapter 4 could not be proclaimed as it could not be operationalized. The situation proposed by the bill is the most ideal position considering our circumstances as a country. This position had been discussed with ACAO, and to a certain extent, they were satisfied with the arrangement. With ASIP in place, they will easily deal with a situation similar to the calibration of aircraft owned by SACA. The executive responsible for aircraft accident and incident investigation is responsible for managing of the accident and incident investigators who will be designated by ASIP to investigate specific accidents. It is therefore critical that a framework be set in advance so as not to hamper the work of ASIP. The executive will not be responsible for designation of investigators, but the management of the investigators. This is meant to enhance independence. In section 2, the commentator also make comment on section 2, an aircraft belonging to South African National Defence Force. And then it says, what about section 142? Will the minister have to give provision for any armed SAAF, that is South African Air Force, and SAPS, which is South African Police Service, aircraft when a flight is planned, for example, from FABL? Chairperson, the response is section 142.1b exempt transportation on behalf of the state by or on behalf of the Armaments Corporation of South Africa Limited, referred to in section 2 of the Armaments Corporation of South Africa Limited Act 51 of 2003, or any undertaking or company established or promoted by the said corporation, or any member, director, employee, or agent of that corporation, or any such undertaking or company or any person in his or capacity as an officer or employee of the state, or any person for the purpose of the Defense Act 2002. In that regard, the minister will not be required to give the permission. Then there's also a question here from the commentator. What has changed in section 11? Is this not the same as the current Civil Aviation 2009? Here, I think the commentator has not analyzed this particular section very well. The difference between the section 11 as it stands in the Principal Act and in the proposed amendment bill is that the way aircraft accidents are standing in the principal legislation. Therefore, we are saying there's no need to repeat aircraft in the very same titles of that particular ways. Therefore, we are just changing that particular name to say aircraft accident and incidents, and we're doing away with the second aircraft there. In the Act, it states aircraft accidents and aircraft incidents. The bill proposed to remove the second aircraft, as indicated. Section 14.1a, with respect to the above requirements, it is necessary to review the independence of the investigation process following the aircraft accident involving Cessna Citation aircraft as operated by the South African Civil Aviation Authority, SACA, that occurred on the 23rd January 2020. Then secondly, this is not in line with ICAO, referred to an extract from ICAO document as referred to. The above is also applicable in Section 41. Our response is as follows, Chairperson, to the comments. ICAO has minimum standards which member states are required to meet. The failure to meet minimum standards may result in significant safety concerns registered against a state. In addition to minimum standards, ICAO has recommended practices which need to be followed by member states. These are practices which are recommended to be applied by member states. ICAO understands that not all member states will be able to implement the recommended practices. That is precisely the reason why they were not elevated to the level of standards. There is no way that ICAO can penalize a state simply because the Accident Investigation Authority is reporting to the same minister with the regulator. Under our current circumstances, we have achieved a high score even on incident investigation. The passing of the bill will enhance our overall achievement. Further aspects of independence will be explored when our circumstances have changed. That is our response, Chairperson. A comment on Section 16, other relevant expertise or qualifications. How is this to be assessed and by whom? The next comment is on Section 18, disqualification and removal of members. This appears in Section 18 of previous Act. What has happened to Section 8, 16 and 17? The reference to 1993 Constitution to be changed to, or this is proper referencing. Chairperson, the commissioner and the experts appointed by the minister will do the assessment. That is our response when dealing with the appointment of members of ASIC. Then it would mean that the panel is the one that will do the assessment. The improper referencing to the Constitution, Chairperson, yes, it is something that needs to be corrected and make proper referencing to the Constitution 108 of 1996. Section 30, Powers of Aviation Safety Investigation Board, and Section 31, D and I, how are financial implications to be handled? And Section 34, search and seizure by appointed investigators. Section 34.1, does this meet constitutional provision? Section 34 is the content of certificate of appointment prescribed. Section 36, return of seized property if a part was damaged after seizure, is however entitled to damages. This was the proposal by the commentator. The finances will be dealt with in accordance with Section 34. ASIP will be paid out of money appropriated by Parliament, levies imposed or charges for the service rendered. It was satisfied as consistent with the Constitution by the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor. Therefore, it is certified as constitutional and also this particular provision complained of. The content of the certificate will be prescribed by the regulations. If the owner wants to claim damages on the asset that was seized for purpose of investigation, he is entitled to do so under the law of delict. Liability does not have to be established by this act. The law of delict deal with is the law of damages caused by somebody else on your property. Therefore, under that law, a person who feels aggrieved or wronged in that his property has been damaged during seizure, he can claim damages in terms of the law of delict. So we don't have to prescribe it in this particular legislation. The next comment is about Section 41, Aircraft Incident Investigation Report. Refer also to comments to Section 14.1A, Section 41. Please note ICAO comments as quoted in Section 14 above. Section 41.5, interim statements. Interim statement has to be issued every 12 months if investigation has not yet completed. This should be included. And also comment on Section 63.1F. Should the Department of Finance not be involved, check and balances, otherwise open to abuse. ASIP is a monopoly with no free market force for check and balances. Our response, Chairperson, is as follows. This is an operational issue that is already covered in the regulations and will be maintained in the regulations. As far it is far-fetched to classify ASIP as a monopoly. ASIP is not providing any service for reward. They are discharging a state function. The Treasury regulations will apply to all financial matters involving ASIP. The rules will give guidance to ensure that actions of ASIP comply and can be measured against predetermined requirements. Clause 10 and clause 13. It is submitted that the period of 4 months notice of an increase in fee charge and levies is too long. Here, Chairperson, I also think that the commentators are missing the point. This period of 4 months, as you can look at it, when you do regulation making, there are two stages whereby you are to advertise in a gazette. That will be a stage whereby you advertise in a gazette requesting members of the public to make inputs on the regulations that you have published. That is the first step. Now, this particular provision says before the minister make the regulations, he must, or before these regulations as published and discussed and approved, before they come into operations, they must be published or they must come into operations 4 months, after the date of publication. They must not come into operation immediately. That is the understanding that need to come to the fore. Now, I think, as explained also by the last commentator, the complaint is they think this publication for 4 months is for comment purposes. That will be too long. I agree with that particular assertion. But the reason why they want this regulation to be published 4 months before they come into operation is for the members of the industry to prepare themselves for the implementation of the regulation. Practically, what will happen is after everything is done properly with the regulations and they are approved as regulations, you proclaim them, but you postpone its operations to with a period of 4 months, and then they start to come into operations, and the industry shall have complied and prepared and gear up themselves to implement those particular regulations. The prohibition of any action includes any attempt to perform that act. The proposed addition will not add any value. This is not supported. What is not supported here is that the commenter says it is proposed that the ways or attempting to influence the commission be added to the text. That is not supported. Clause 24, section 99, the expansion of the limitation of liability is too wide. This should remain restricted to that of the employees of SACA. The other comment is on clause 32, section 1131. What about conditions of section 1134 and 5? The response is as follows. SACA designates persons who are not its employees. The persons exercising the powers conferred by this act also need to be protected in the similar vein with SACA, with SACA's employees. The next response, it is not clear what the commentator is intending to say here in clause 32 of section 113. I'm about to finish, Chairperson. Clause 48, amendment of section 130 exemptions. This is not practical. This is not a practical proposal. The minister's office will be swamped by exemptions requests and will cause delays and major problems for the industry. This must remain with director unless provision is made for director to grant exemptions in respect of the cars. However, note has to be taken by comments of a previous legal advisor who pointed out that clause 52 to 148, there should be a clear separation in authorization for safety and security purposes, function of authorized officers and persons have distinct differences in function, hence authorization need to be different. Our response to this comment, Chairperson, is that granting of exemptions is entails exempting a person from complying with the regulations. Now, the power to make regulation is vested in the minister. And if you need an exemption from the operations of the regulations, then you need to request that particular exemption from the person who is empowered to make those regulations. And in this instance, it is the minister. Hence, the power to exempt anyone from complying with the regulations should be conferred to the minister. If there are many requests for exemption that are given, that would entail that the regulation concerned would need to be changed or readjusted. The authorization takes place on a case-by-case basis. What is contained in the Act are provisions that deal comprehensively with authorizations. Of course, in practice, the authorizations are different depending on what one is authorized to do. There is a clear separation for authorization for safety and security. And also to clarify something, Chairperson, even if the Act says authorized by the minister or the exemptions are to be done by the minister, one should remember that a minister's office, the political office, there is also a department and some expertise like the branch civil aviation in the department that advises also the minister on any request to the minister. Therefore, from the department side, that particular request will have a division that deals with those kind of requests on behalf of the minister or advising the minister on whether to grant or not. When it goes to the minister there, already it has been looked at also by departmental officials, and the minister will also look at the advice of departmental officials as proposed and then he has to make a decision on whether to grant or not. So it does not mean that there will be an administrative office in the ministry that will be practically tasked to look into the pros and cons of this request for exemptions. But it's in the department, it will look at there and advise the minister accordingly. Clause 53 amendment of section 142(3) of the Principal Act, the words of the convention relating to offences other acts committed on board on aircraft 1963 at Tokyo are necessary and confusing. This chairperson, we agree with the comment, subsection 3 should be revised as follows. An aircraft which upon reasonable grounds is believed to be engaged in conveying any conventional arms, drugs, explosives, radioactive or nuclear material, biological weapons, weapons of mass destruction, or animal product contrary to subsection 2, then we're doing away with that subsection 1, which is referred to in the Principal Act, or 2 capital A, is subject to the provisions of the regulations with regard to the identification, interception of aircraft, provided that any definition and interception of an aircraft shall take place with due regard to the provisions of Annex 2 to the Convention. Oh, it just needs to end at Annex 2 to the Convention, and all other references in square brackets and reference to Tokyo Convention are done away with. So we agree with the proposal by the commentator. Section 60, dealing with section 155, the commentator says in this regard, it has to be pointed out that with reference to the proposed establishment of the Fees Committee, as per section 1551 in the draft bill, such a committee which consists of members of the aviation industry already exists as one of six as one of a subcommittee of the CARCOM. Section 159 of the Principal Act and subpart two of the Civil Aviation Regulation 2011. It is therefore submitted that it would appear that the proposed fees committee is a duplicate of the existing fees subcommittee of CARCOM and is therefore not necessary. The response is that some of the fees of FACA are not channeled through CARCOM. The establishment of the fees committee will ensure that the industry participate in the discussion regarding any fees that are to be charged by FACA. Clause 61, deletion of section 163(3) of the Principal Act. It is submitted that the deletion of this particular subsection is not justified for the following reasons. The process how international standards will be incorporated into our law is provided in the regulations. It is sufficient that the Act gives authority to the Commissioner to make technical standards under the authority of the regulations made by the Minister. We disagree for the deletion. The provision is giving effect to industry participation in that the Commissioner must, before issuing technical standards, consult with industry. This ensures that the industry is involved in the development and finalization of the technical standard. Then there was this general comment which was written in Zulu, but here we have translated it into English. This is just a general comment which says, I believe that we can reduce the cost of aircraft production, oil, diesel, and petrol used by aircraft. I believe it will be a good idea that there should be a debt cancellation of all aircraft. This will help that every citizen will have access to free airplane travel. Then it says, Honorable, I was just stating my views regarding the civil aviation bill in assisting our government in boosting our economy. We noted the comment, Chairperson. And thank you, Chairperson. That is the response from the Department of Transport. And we will take the comments, the questions and clarifications. And as I have stated, that I'm with the delegation that will also be assisting in responding to the questions. Thank you, Chair and members.
Thank you, Advocate Masombuk. You have put the position of the department very clear, and you have tried to clarify on issues that needed some clarity. Can I see hands from the House Portfolio Committee members?
I can see the hand of Honorable Hansinger, followed by Honorable Umanu Uchambas. Honorable Pete May, you want to say something?
Yes, I'd also like to ask a question. Thank you.
Followed by Honorable Chabangu. Let's give those four hands for now in that order, please. It will be Honorable Chris Hansinger, Honorable Mangu, Honorable May, Honorable Chabangu, then Honorable Kutole. In that order, please, Honorable Members.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you, Mr. Masombu. On a lighter note, Mr. Masombu, it's been said that us men talk a lot less and use about 7,000 words per day. I think you came close to that, and let me compliment you on working through quite a substantial document, also recognizing the fact that the team had to work through a lot of comments. So thank you for the response. Chairperson, my first point would talk to the whole issue of the preferential creditor idea. And it's not so much a question of why and whether preferential creditor status should be considered or not and included or not, but also a question of parallel to the desire to be recognized as a future preferential creditor. The other parallel question to that is, what other sanctions are there that would achieve the same effect as being a preferential creditor? And related to that, Chairperson, I think we were quite clear in requesting a breakdown of these charges so that we can understand why some comments referred to a differentiation of the charges and monies paid. Because some comments said it is not necessary to be a preferential creditor on everything, but on certain things, definitely. So therefore, Chairperson, the department, therefore, in my view, has failed to present to us a breakdown of what we requested of all the levies. We know of passenger safety charges, we know of fuel levies, but it would be nice for from the department to acknowledge our request, firstly, and give us a breakdown of these charges, and who collects these charges, and what the volume of these charges are in relation to the total revenue stream from levies and monies, so that we build an understanding and insight of why it is necessary then to consider a preferential creditor status, and also to influence and consider other sanctions on these particular aspects and elements of the total revenue income. just a general comment, Chairperson. You know, a lot of substantial input was made by our participants in terms of public participation submissions. And I just find it very thin from the department to say this idea about this will have little effect and it will have, small consequence. And it's just basically brushed off, whereas it is due to the vagueness of the current description that these issues arise. And therefore, I think a lot of these elements should be revisited and re-looked at. To reply that the point was missed, I think is a strong indication of the vagueness of the current print and where enhancements should be made. And therefore, the original comment just cannot be ignored, but it should be kept live until clarity in terms of the current print is developed. Chairperson, there's also been a lot of agreement with many points by the department, some of which some of us might not agree with, which develops a sort of a third sphere of opinion. But I think it would be valuable to look at a next print with all the corrections and because there's been a lot of ideas around changes in definition, and that we would consider it at that stage again. But I'm rather disappointed that the department did not give us a breakdown upon our request of these charges, monies and fees. Thank you, Chairperson.
Enkosi kakhulu tata. Mfene, Jambas.
Ndiyabulisa sihlalo. Morning colleagues.
Sure.
I apologize, Chair, for starting a bit late. I had a huge challenge with my technology this morning. However, I did manage to go in and be able to participate. Mine is very, very, it's only one. I do concur with my colleague, Honorable Hunsinger, with the disappointment and at non-availability of the information that we had requested. It would assist us. And I think for me, it also begs the bigger question of, do we understand as the department, what is the purpose of public participation? You know, when our comments in the main sound defensive, sound pushing certain comments of people aside, I find it very discouraging when we want people to give us their opinions. Because most of these people sit there and they take time. We might not agree with what they are saying, but just to put them aside, I don't think it fulfills the purpose of public participation in the processes we are undertaking, particularly as legislators. That is just my generic comment. However, my question, which is only one seeking clarity, the Advocate Masombuka mentioned that a separate investigating body is provided for in current legislation. I think it's chapter 4, if I recall what he said in terms of his presentation. However, he says it cannot be implemented or operationalized. It would appear because of financial constraints. That was my assumption. Now, I'm assuming that ACIP itself would have some financial implications. I would like to know that difference there. What would be the difference in these finances? Because here we are talking about a future that is a separate investigating body. The cost, yes, might be high according to what Advocate Masombuka is saying, if that is the reason. However, what are the costs of not doing it and rather do it the way we are doing? So again, I want to know, what are the figures? When you say we are unable to do it, what are the financial implications? And what is the cost of not doing it? That is my only question, stroke seeking clarity after my comments. Thank you, Chair.
Jambas, siyabonga mfowethu. Akuzolandelayo. Honorable May.
Thank you, Chairperson. I've heard the word independent many times this morning. I read in the newspaper said there were 14 airplane crashes in the private sector during January. In which way are we as portfolio committee involved? If I'm correct, a report must be every 12 months. Are we as a portfolio committee on transport included to see the report? If not, why not? Thank you.
Dankie baie, Akbarelede.
Let me take this opportunity to say thank you, Chair. And Mr. Masombuka, the response. What method should be used? Can you hear me?
Oh, we don't hear you. We hear people in the kitchen.
No, there are no people in the kitchen. Okay. What method should be used that the entities should not find themselves in trouble of using money that does not belong to them, which belongs to the department? Who must see to it that the money is put in trust, in the trust account? And who are the signatories of the trust account? Thank you, sir.
Siyabonga. Matiwa. Mondays. Genava.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you to Advocate Masombuka. But Chairperson, I need some clarity on the first one is that one of changing the director to the commissioner. I'm trying to check the reason because he's trying to make us to understand the changing of that one. But I'm trying to check because most of the time, if you are talking about commissioner, we are talking about the investigators. So now I'm trying to check, but the director, the difference between the director and the commissioner. And the other interpretation is that one, the issue of SAMTF and the issue of the issue of investigating by SACAR. What will be the difference if that one can be clarified? Thank you very much.
Siyabonga Mondisi. I hope I'm not leaving anybody out here. I'm just worried that I don't see a hand of Honorable Lawrence McDonald, but it's okay.
Jefferson, I'm covered by the previous speaker. Thank you very much, Jefferson. I didn't want to disrupt your meeting. Thanks, Jefferson.
Thank you very much. Your silence was beginning to concern me. Thank you. Baba Umasombo. Bengizozibiza ithakazelo zakho baba ngizazi. Asukuzweke mfowethu, advocate.
Thokoza baba. Chairperson, like I said, I've got a delegation that will also be assisting. They will also give some input. I'll give other questions to them to respond. On the issue of the titles of a director and a commissioner, Chairperson, we have elaborated that we are distinguishing the title of director, which is normally used in the public service, referring to senior management in the public service from that of a director of civil aviation. We have also alluded to the fact that it does not bring any hardship for any other person to change that particular title to a commissioner of civil aviation. And there is no benefits that will be derived by the director or commissioner in that change of that particular title. It's just a question of just distinguishing that particular director from those that are in the public service. I just want to check Chairperson as to whether Mr. Livasmaba also is connected so that he can also take other questions. And with regard to the Chairperson, the first question by Honorable Homsinga on the information requested recently, there is a document that we have sent to the Secretariat yesterday that explains those particular fees and user charges. And it's a two-page detailed document that explains what has been requested. If it can be put also or uplifted and I'll request Ms. Ndandala to go through it and explain it. Thank you, Chairperson. I see Livers is raising their hand. He's going to take other questions.
Livers Mabaso, all the way from London. Okay, let's hear if Livers can hear us.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I can hear you. It's from Canada, not London.
Oh, all the way from Canada. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, and thanks for giving me the opportunity. Yes, Mr. Advocate Masumbuka has indicated that the breakdown has been submitted. I think there was just a communication breakdown with it being given to the honorable members. If it is slighted, we will be able to take the members through it. Honorable Msinga also talked about the vagueness. And also we acknowledge the fact that we might seem to be dismissive. Perhaps it was because we were doing comments for the committee, so we were not the ones directly engaging with the public at that. So that might be the difference in the explanation. If we were responding directly to the public, I think it will not be as we have put it. So in any event, I also want to highlight to the honorable members that most, in fact, the commentators who commented on whose comments we are dealing with today, except for the last general commentator who made general comments, they were part of the process one way or another. So this bill was a thoroughly workshop. So we were working with them, and then So let me go to the question asked by Honorable Mangu about Chapter 4. And then the difference in finances. When the Civil Aviation Act was done, the current Civil Aviation Act that we are doing, there was a threat of significant safety findings against South Africa. Because the legislations as they were then were found to be wanting. So the act had to be done in a rush, and then Chapter 4 was introduced, which was to provide for the independence of the accident and incident investigation. However, when now we want to action it, Treasury told us in no uncertain terms that they are not going to give us money for that. So for more than 10 years, we had been trying to fight it, maybe less than 10 years. But for a number of years, we have been trying to find a way how we can get money until we realize that we can't move, but then we need to get something moving so that at least we acquire that level of independence. So that's why then, to me, it was the innovative way to bridge up the financial challenges of having a full agency for accident investigation and the status quo, where the accident investigations is run by the CAA. It might be beneficial also to highlight to the honorable members that currently we are utilizing the memorandum of agreement signed by the between the Minister of Transport and the Director of Civil Aviation Authority. So we had to do that because we had to convince the International Civil Aviation Organization that we have some form of independence. So they grudgingly accepted that, and because of the explanation that we are coming with a different concept, which to them, this concept that it's on the current bill, it has never been done before by anyone. It was an innovative way. And then once we had to sit down with them, and then we indicate that this is what we can do. And then they accepted that we can move in that way. So as to come to the exact amounts, because the money will keep on changing because of the changing circumstances. At some point, the calculations which were done for us to be able to implement Chapter 4, we were needed around 50 million rand. So which Treasury did not, said they were not going to give us. So when it comes to the Aviation Safety Investigation Board, so we can institute the board within the budget allocation to the department, because this is an independent board. They are not sitting full time on this responsibility. They will see, they will be paid as per sittings, and then they will designate investigators to investigate accidents. So within the budgetary allocation that the department has, we are able to implement what we are proposing in the current bill. And then the cost of not doing it, we still have to still check on that. But the most ideal situation would be to have a totally independent aircraft accident and incident investigation. So we are thinking that when the circumstances have changed, then we will come up with a concept, and then which will run through the process of consultation, and then will also pass through this committee. Honorable May asked about, if I understood well, unfortunately was breaking at some point. I think he was referring to the reports of accident investigation, whether the committee has access or not. The reports of accident and incident investigations are public documents. Once the investigation is finalized, the reports are published on the website of both the Department of Transport and the CAA. So if the committee wants to be provided with any report, or even if the committee were to say they want all the reports, copies of all the reports, that can be provided. If the committee wants specific reports, we can gladly provide them. Honorable Shabangu asked about the trust account. So the issue of the trust account, it comes because Advocate Masumbuga put it well, that this money is the money collected in trust for somebody else. So if they put it in their business account, so they will use the money as part of their business revenue. So they have to put it in a trust account. So the trust account will be opened by the entity that receives the money on behalf of the CAA. So they are the ones who will operate the trust account. So at the end of the month, then they will transfer the money to the CAA. So it's different to a trust which perhaps one creates for the benefits of his or her minor children, which now we appoint trustees. So it's not in that fashion. So this one, the correct analogy is with the attorneys, because when you go to the attorney and then you pay a deposit of 50,000 rand, you have a case, they will put it in a trust account. And when they've done work for about 10,000, for instance, they will transfer 10,000 from the trust account to their own account, their business account. So the other one will still remain, it's the client's money. So that is how it will operate. Perhaps also for the benefit of the committee, this money in the past, it was separate from the tickets. So as a passenger, you will buy a ticket, and then when you go to the airport before boarding, you will be required to pay the airport taxes, the passenger safety charge, all this other money. It was additional paid. So it was realized by the International Civil Aviation Organization that it's putting an unnecessary burden on the flying public, and then it is also creating difficulty. So that's why then this money was is put in the total amount for the ticket. But when you look at the airline ticket, once you when you get your airline ticket, you can look at a look, there's a breakdown of the amount. It will indicate how much is the base fare for flying, how much are the other taxes and revenues collected on behalf of other people. So the airline, the money does not belong to the airline, but to those that they collect on their behalf. On the question asked by Honorable Stolle about the director and the commissioner, I tell you, the most common phrase used by ICAO is the Director General of Civil Aviation. So in the South African concept, the Director General is the accounting officer of the department. So when we wanted to put that word in line with ICAO, we were told that no, we cannot, because it will create confusion. So at that time, that's why they used Director of Civil Aviation. However, when you use Director of Civil Aviation, it also creates confusion, because a director in the public service is the first level entry of senior management, as opposed to somebody who is running an organization. So when we complete ICAO documents, there are quite a number of documents which we have to complete indicating the different role players. So when you put somebody in charge as the director of civil aviation, it creates a confusion as well. So initially, when we do the bill, we're using the chief executive officer. So this was changed at NEDLAC, because some members of NEDLAC felt that there was some issues with some chief executive officers. So they had a problem with the name, and then we ended up coming to the name of commissioner, which works perfectly fine because of the responsibilities of this person. I hope I have addressed all the questions, Mr. Chair.
Thank
Amen from Canada. Thank you.
Before you proceed, Masombuga.
Yes, Baba Masombuga.
We've got also Ms. Ndandeni, and I would want her to. This is the document or information that was requested by the members, and Ms. Ndandeni can clarify it better from a practical perspective. If we can check with her as well as is connected or not.
There was also a detailed response from the department, which was emailed to us. I saw yesterday. Let's then check Ms. Nandini. Are you here, ma'am?
Thank you, Chair. I am connected.
You are connected. Thanks God that is not raining and nobody can say, hey, network. You can go on.
Thank you very much, Chair. There's a bar that is impeding on me being able to see the document that is flighted.
Where are you? Are you in London also?
I can see properly now, Chair. Thank you very much, Chair. I'm not going to read through the document, but I will just explain what is contained in each.
Sure.
So one of the charges that is collected on behalf of the Civil Aviation Authority, with which Mr. Livers has, Mabaso has touched on, is the passenger safety charge. The passenger safety charge is collected as a result of the provisions of Part 187 of the Civil Aviation Regulation. These monies are charged from the passengers that are flying, and the money is collected by operators. We normally call them airlines on behalf of the Civil Aviation Authority. A question was posed as to how much are the, in terms of percentages, are this amount contributing to the financial stability of the Civil Aviation Authority? So the passenger safety charge before COVID constituted about 75%, around 75% of the overall finances of the Civil Aviation Authority. The next amount would then be the fuel levy. The fuel levy is charged and is the collection thereof is empowered by the Levies Act. It is charged and received by wholesale distributors and agents who provide gas or fuel to non-scheduled operations. Non-scheduled operations are like your charter flights and cargo flights. So they collect the distributors collect this money and they pay it over to the Civil Aviation Authority. It is also, I normally call them taxes that are collected on behalf of the organization, because the same way that for our cars we pay the tax to the government, that's the same way the government is collecting money to sustain Civil Aviation Authority financially from the users and the beneficiaries of the civil aviation. The third amount that, the fuel levy constituted about 2.8% of the overall financial stability of the Civil Aviation Authority. The third amount is the user fee. The user fee is the charges that are collected from the clients that Civil Aviation Authority is servicing. For instance, if you are applying for a pilot license, you are required to pay a certain amount in order for you to get your license. This amount does not require any re-incensing, because if you do not pay, Civil Aviation Authority will simply not render the service to you. But the challenge is with the two that I've already mentioned, the passenger safety charge and the fuel levy. Chairperson, that will be my submission. The user fee constitute about 15% of the overall finances of the Civil Aviation Authority. Thank you very much.
Am I pronouncing your surname or name correctly? Ndandani.
Ndandani.
On.
Ndandani, Che.
On Ndandani. And what is the B standing for?
If you see the dove when it is flying, in Xhosa we say Iandanda.
Oh.
So it's Nago. That's the description of that.
Okay. Thank you very much. Babumasondo, Sombuga, do you wish to say something? Before I give over to members.
Thanks, Chairperson. I think we have touched on the response, on the question posed. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Just about to wrap up, let's hear what Honorable Member Chris Hunsinger wants to say. Over to you, sir.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for the clarity from the department and the efficiency in dealing with the question. I missed the document that was sent yesterday. It might be my oversight since it was a hectic afternoon. Chairperson, just related to the fees, 75%, 2.8% and 15% leave us with 92.8. So if a 2.8% fuel levy is regarded as substantial in mentioning, what does the other 7.2% constitute of? If the department doesn't have the figures right now, certainly I'm sure it would be acceptable. But for completion's sake, Chairperson, it's important that we get all these numbers together so that we have an adequate insight and understanding. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. I'm sure the department is capable of just providing numbers. Advocate Masombuge.
Chairperson, noted. We'll provide.
Thank you very much for your extensive information. I think we're coming right on that side of the things. I wish to liberate you for now, the department. Thank you very much for your preparation. I must say, from where I'm seated, I can see things improving a bit. Maybe I should say a lot, and hope with time we will progress to a point where there are no gaps in terms of any other information that may be needed. Otherwise, thank you very much, Advocate and your team. Do say to the DG, we miss him. It has been several days now not seeing him, but we also appreciate talking to people in Canada. I hope they are representing us well there. Honorable members, I guess this was the business of the day today. We will meet in the house, not as a portfolio committee, but do remember we're meeting on Friday, this Friday, this week, from 9 to 11, half past 11. Stats on the road carnage presented live in this platform, in this portfolio committee by the Department of Transport. I'm sure at that particular time they will be led by the minister himself, and I'm sure the DG will also be there. Am I correct, Mr. Masombo? Oh, he's gone. Matati, any other thing from your side?
Chair. No, Chair, there's nothing.
Thank you very much. You are liberated. Long live everybody. Even those who are overseas, long live. Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Long live the Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Afbareliede.
Mangete. Long live Mangete.
Thank you.